97.9 FM, WCHL, and the UNC College of Journalism and Mass Communication presents Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. Sports Focus is dedicated to in-depth examinations of issues of overarching importance in the sports world. Each week, we'll discuss problems and look for solutions to problems in professional, collegiate, and amateur sports. From Carroll Hall on the UNC campus, here's your host, journalism professor Charlie Tuggle.
Welcome to Sports Focus. Our topic today, the continuing fallout from the Weinstein Report and the national attention the academic scandal at UNC is receiving. Our guest, Jerry Gurney, president of the Drake Group, a professor at the University of Oklahoma, and a past president of the National Association of Academic Advisors for Athletics. The Drake Group is committed to promoting academic integrity in college athletics, and Jerry is calling in by Skype from Norman, Oklahoma. Jerry, the Weinstein Report, its breadth, its depth, were you shocked?
I certainly was shocked, having done research looking at the history of academic fraud in the NCAA. Going back to 1953, there is nothing in the history that even comes close to involving the number of student athletes, involving the length of time, involving the athletic nexus of people in the athletic department as well as on campus, including faculty. There is nothing that compares to this. This is in a class by itself.
Our Chancellor, Carol Folt, the question has been for the past several years, almost 4 years now, was this an academics problem? Was it an athletics problem? And she says, basically, it's both. There's no way you can say it's anything other than both things. How do you think the university has handled this situation up to the release of the Weinstein Report and since the release?
Prior to the release of the Weinstein Report, I think it handled it terribly by using the defense that since this was involving faculty, it was an academic issue only because other students were enrolled in the same classes, when in fact, this was not a scheme that was developed primarily to help students in general, but to help athletes. And so that lends itself to all sorts of questions with respect to the eligibility of these athletes. Were they actually eligible? Did they earn eligibility prior to competing in the classroom?
Now, Weinstein and his team did not link up grades, certain grades with certain students, and we can understand why not, but the NCAA will certainly do that in its investigation and find out if player X on championship team Y was eligible only because of these fake classes, correct?
That's correct. The Weinstein group does not have the expertise to look at the eligibility and the effect of these courses on individual athletes. And how that had affected eligibility for competition. There are two areas in the rules of the NCAA that they need to be concerned about. One is, as a result of taking these, I'm going to say, fraudulent or phony courses, did that make up their full-time enrollment? So were they enrolled in a full-time class load? If the answer is no, they were not only ineligible to compete, but also ineligible to even practice. The second question has to do with progress toward degree. If the athlete needed these courses in order to establish continuing eligibility or progress toward degree, and they're fraudulent, then we're looking at vacation of wins, and that is quite common in NCAA sanctions. And then you have the whole issue of ethical conduct violations and show cause order, as we saw in John Blake. The specific violation is bylaw 10.1b, and that has to do with a student having or anyone having knowledge of a student gaining eligibility through falsified transcripts or through attaining credit through falsified means. And anyone involved with that will likely have ethical conduct violations. And then lastly, you have the issue of whether it constitutes an lack of institutional control violation or a less severe one, which is called failure to monitor. Judging from Wainstein's description of the length of time and the lack of oversight and supervision that occurred in this case, I think you're looking, unfortunately, at a whopping lack of institutional control sanction.
What's the real difference? Can you explain that for our listeners between lack of institutional control and failure to monitor? They seem almost the same thing, but by degree, they must not be.
Lack of institutional control is a complete breakdown in oversight, similar to what Wainstein was describing. A failure to monitor is just simply, as it suggests, not monitoring a particular aspect of the rules.
So one of the things that I've noticed, Jerry, in years of covering different NC2A investigations is that the organization always asks two questions. What did you know and what should you have known? So let's get into especially the second part of that question when Sports Focus returns.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now, back to the show on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Welcome back to Sports Focus and our discussion of the Wainstein Report with Jerry Gurney of the Drake Group. Jerry, before the break, we were talking about the two major questions that the NC2A is going to ask. What did you know? What should you have known? With the new rules, isn't the second part of that even more important than it used to be, the what should you have known part?
It's much more important. In 2012, the NCAA restructured its infractions system. And now, if a major rule is broken, the coach is assumed to have known what the staff is doing. And in Roy Williams' case, he brought in a familiar former staff member to handle academics of the basketball team. He also assigned academics with an assistant coach. So the question then becomes, should he have known that? And according to these new rules, Roy Williams is assumed to have known that. He would have to point out extraordinary reasons why he didn't know, why he had no idea. And he's going to have a difficult time with that for the very reason he's familiar with these people. And I know the North Carolina community has had difficulty with the McCants allegations, but McCants essentially is saying that he went from being on probation or being in jeopardy of maintaining his eligibility to taking four classes in which he did no work, didn't turn in any work, and got all A's. Now, if you're the head coach, one would logically ask, why didn't you explore that with that athlete who had difficulty in the past maintaining his eligibility? Doesn't that seem odd? And he's going to have to answer that to that. I'm sure Roy Williams is a wonderful guy. I'm sure he has a wonderful golf game, but that's not going to satisfy the NCAA. They're going to want to know, why didn't you know? And he's going to have difficulty with that.
Of course.
So I think he has trouble down the road.
Of course, at the ACC Media Day earlier this week in Charlotte, North Carolina, he got asked a lot of questions about that. Let's listen to one response.
I know I've never one day in my life failed to do something knowingly that would hurt our student athletes. I've never one day in my life did something that I shouldn't have done. If you want to accuse me of being naive, go ahead. You can be as skeptical as you want, but the people that know Roy Williams knows that some of those things are being said are not fair.
So, Jerry, could it simply be naivete?
I think his response was rather folksy and very nice and believable, but he's going to have to answer some very serious questions of why he didn't know. And simply saying it's naivete sort of goes against the grain of this new rule, where head coaches are supposed to know. Now, I've worked for 31 years in athletics, hand-in-hand with basketball programs, beginning since 1980. And basketball is different than, for example, football. And the reason that it's different is it only has about 15 athletes on the team. There are as many assistant coaches in a closed, encapsulated group that probably as many assistant coaches or more than there are actual players. And in basketball, everybody knows everybody's business. And I'm sure the investigators and I'm sure the people on the committee on infractions know that also. It's very difficult to get by with, I didn't know. Very difficult. Is it possible? Yes. I'm sure there are lots of good attorneys that will defend the university and Roy Williams and the program. But I have my doubts that he's going to get by without a violation, particularly the ethical aspect of this, in terms of whether or not he should have known or was just simply naive.
So we've talked a little bit about Roy Williams. Now let's switch over to Bubba Cunningham, new athletics director, quoted on a local radio talk show just a few days ago, and then the subject of an editorial in the News and Observer newspaper in which he was accused of basically soft-selling the findings. Is that your take on what he was trying to do?
No, not particularly. I'm not sure if you were referring to a statement that we're not going to place any further sanctions on ourselves. Is that what you were talking about?
Yeah, and then also he said that, well, when you look at it, it's really not all that bad, because if you divide it by how many years we're talking about and how many teams we have here, it winds up being only about 3 athletes per team. And in the grand scheme of things, maybe that's not so terrible.
We're talking about approximately 1,500 athletes, most of which were in football and men's basketball. That's nonsense. However, I can understand why he is advocating not sanctioning UNC at this point. At this point, the NCAA is going to take over, and there is no reason why he should self-sustain further sanctions on the university. The damage is done. The good news is there are some mitigating circumstances here. The mitigating circumstances, although it took a great deal of time over many years, was that the university finally got to the bottom of this. They had to go to an outside source, but they got to the bottom of it. It's very clear what happened. And that will give that will mitigate the sanctions somewhat. I think Chancellor Folt will get a good deal of credit for her institution. The bad news is that this is such an egregious, nefarious case involving faculty, involving cover-up, And what, as a former director of compliance at the University of Maryland, I can tell you my observation of NCAA infractions is that it's always the cover-up that makes matters worse. And that's where the act becomes inexcusable.
And we'll pick up on that thought when Sports Focus returns.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now back to the show on 97.9 FM WCHL.
Welcome back to Sports Focus and our discussion of the Weinstein Report and the national implications of it. We're talking to Jerry Gurney of the Drake Group. Jerry, we were talking earlier about Bubba Cunningham and an editorial in the newspaper here locally saying, taking him to task, basically, for trying to whitewash a very serious situation. Earlier in the week, a colleague of mine was speaking to a colleague of his, who is a very high-ranking former, very high-ranking state official, who asked the question, how much urine does it take to spoil a quart of milk? So the thinking is you can downplay it or you can spread it out in any way you want to. You can't get away from how serious this issue is.
I think this your friend is very astute. As I said previously, the damage is done. There are some mitigating circumstances. And don't forget that the University of North Carolina has many things going for it. It has, number one, a great university. It has also largely cleaned up the mess. And while I think they can do more, I think that it is not likely to reoccur, at least in my lifetime. So this will become history. The lifespan of this scandal will last through the sanctions, but when the NCAA Committee on Infractions finishes and all the appeals are done and the sanctions begin to take place, there will be an endpoint. There is a light at the end of the tunnel. And North Carolina certainly is the type of university that can and will bounce back. I'm convinced of that. They will have good people working there. They have a wonderful faculty who now understand that they need to have greater oversight and not to be so trusting of intercollegiate athletics. And they will ensure, after all, the faculty are the guardians of integrity. I think they missed the boat in this instance for a long period of time, and they didn't really act decisively enough. But over time, they'll get back on track. I'm convinced of that.
There are lots of possible sanctions. If you had to guess, what do you think is coming down the road for UNC athletics?
Well, for one thing, when they look at eligibility, they're going to look at vacating wins, both in football and in men's basketball, and in other sports for that matter. I think also, before I go over the sanctions, I will say that they're probably not through finding additional sanctions. Oftentimes when an investigation is going on, investigators will stumble on new infractions. They're very good at that. But when they look at eligibility, you're looking at vacating wins, vacating championships, vacating, returning revenues earned during bowl games, returning revenues from the ACC tournament because of ineligible players playing, returning March Madness money, basketball tournament money. So you're looking at financial penalties. You'll be looking at a long-term probation. You'll be looking at postseason sanctions. You'll be looking at ethical violations, a number of ethical violations of coaches. And I think it'll be more than just the ones named. I suspect when they start looking at baseball, that might also be a problem. But those are the kinds of sanctions that typically you see in lack of institutional control. It is the most serious violation you could have.
And we'll have to leave it right there. That does it for this edition of Sports Focus. Thanks to our guest, Jerry Gurney. Thanks also to engineer Gary Kirk. And thanks to you for listening. Cheers.
Thanks to Richard Southall, Mark Nagel, and Deborah Southall of the College Sport Research Institute at the University of South Carolina for their research and guidance, and for access to CSRI's international network of sources. Sports Focus is a production of UNC's College of Journalism and Mass Communication.